Chapter 17. The Olmec Enigma. After Tres Zapotes, our next stop was San Lorenzo, an Olmec site lying southwest of Coatzacoalcos, in the heart of the serpent sanctuary the legends of Quetzalcoatl made reference to. It was at San Lorenzo that the earliest carbon dates for an Olmec site, around 1500 BC, had been recorded by archaeologists. However, Olmec culture appeared to have been fully evolved by that epoch, and there was no evidence that the evolution had taken place in the vicinity of San Lorenzo. In this, there lay a mystery. The Olmecs, after all, had built a significant civilization which had carried out prodigious engineering works and had developed the capacity to carve and manipulate vast blocks of stone. Several of the huge monolithic heads, weighing 20 tons or more, had been moved as far as 60 miles overland after being quarried in the Tuxtla Mountains. So where, if not at ancient San Lorenzo, had their technological expertise and sophisticated organization been experimented with, evolved, and refined? Strangely, despite the best efforts of archaeologists, not a single solitary sign of anything that could be described as the developmental phase of Olmec society had been unearthed anywhere in Mexico, or for that matter, anywhere in the New World. These people, whose characteristic form of artistic expression was the carving of huge negroid heads, appeared to have come from nowhere. San Lorenzo. We reached San Lorenzo late in the afternoon. Here, at the dawn of history in Central America, the Olmecs had heaped up an artificial mound more than 100 feet high as part of an immense structure some 4,000 feet in length and 2,000 feet in width. We climbed the dominant mound, now heavily overgrown with thick tropical vegetation, and from the summit we could see for miles across the surrounding countryside. A great many lesser mounds were also visible, and around about were several of the deep trenches the archaeologist Michael Coe had dug when he had excavated the site in 1966. Coe's team made a number of finds here, which included more than 20 artificial reservoirs linked by a highly sophisticated network of basalt-lined troughs. Part of this system was built into a ridge. When it was rediscovered, water still gushed forth from it during heavy rains, as it had done for more than 3,000 years. The main line of the drainage ran from east to west. Into it, linked by joints made to an advanced design, three subsidiary lines were channeled. After surveying the site thoroughly, the archaeologists admitted that they could not understand the purpose of this elaborate system of sluices and waterworks. Nor were they able to come up with an explanation for another enigma. This was the deliberate burial, along specific alignments, of five of the massive pieces of sculpture showing negroid features, now widely identified as Olmec heads. These peculiar and apparently ritualistic graves also yielded more than 60 precious objects and artifacts, including beautiful instruments made of jade and exquisitely carved statuettes. Some of the statuettes had been systematically mutilated before burial. The way the San Lorenzo sculptures had been interred made it extremely difficult to fix their true age, even though fragments of charcoal were found in the same strata as some of the buried objects. Unlike the sculptures, these charcoal pieces could be carbon dated. They were, and produced readings in the range of 1200 BC. This did not mean, however, that the sculptures had been carved in 1200 BC. They could have been, but they could have originated in a period hundreds or even thousands of years earlier than that. It was by no means impossible that these great works of art, with their intrinsic beauty and an indefinable numinous power, could have been preserved and venerated by many different cultures before being buried at San Lorenzo. The charcoal associated with them proved only that the sculptures were at least as old as 1200 BC. It did not set any upper limit on their antiquity. La Venta. We left San Lorenzo as the sun was going down, heading for the city of Villahermosa, more than 150 kilometers to the east in the province of Tabasco. To get there, we rejoined the main road running from Acayucan to Villahermosa and bypassing the port of Coatzacoalcos in a zone of oil refineries, towering pylons, and ultra-modern suspension bridges. The change of pace between the sleepy rural backwater where San Lorenzo was located and the pockmarked industrial landscape around Coatzacoalcos was almost shocking. Moreover, the only reason that the time-worn outlines of the Olmec site could still be seen at San Lorenzo was that oil had not yet been found there. It had, however, been found at La Venta, to the eternal loss of archaeology. We were now passing La Venta. Due north, off a slip road from the freeway, this sodium-lit petroleum city glowed in the dark like a vision of nuclear disaster. Since the 1940s, it had been extensively developed by the oil industry. An airstrip now bisected the site where a most unusual pyramid had once stood, and flaring smokestacks darkened the sky, which Olmec stargazers must once have searched for the rising of the planets. Lamentably, the bulldozers of the developers had flattened virtually everything of interest before proper excavations could be conducted, with the result that many of the ancient structures had not been explored at all. We will never know what they could have said about the people who built and used them. Matthew Sterling, who excavated Tres Zapotes, carried out the bulk of the archaeological work done at La Venta before progress and oil money erased it. Carbon dating suggested that the Olmecs had established themselves here between 1500 and 1100 BC and had continued to occupy the site, which consisted of an island lying in the marshes to the east of the Tonala River, until about 400 BC. Then construction was suddenly abandoned. All existing buildings were ceremonially defaced or demolished, and several huge stone heads and other smaller pieces of sculpture were ritually buried in peculiar graves, just as had happened at San Lorenzo. The La Venta graves were elaborate and carefully prepared, lined with thousands of tiny blue tiles and filled up with layers of multicolored clay. At one spot, some 15,000 cubic feet of earth had been dug out of the ground to make a deep pit. Its floor had been carefully covered with serpentine blocks and all the earth put back. Three mosaic pavements were also found, intentionally buried beneath several alternating layers of clay and adobe. La Venta's principal pyramid stood at the southern end of the site. Roughly circular at ground level, it took the form of a fluted cone, the rounded sides consisting of 10 vertical ridges with gullies between. The pyramid was 100 feet tall, almost 200 feet in diameter, and had an overall mass in the region of 300,000 cubic feet, an impressive monument by any standards. The remainder of the site stretched for almost half a kilometer along an axis that pointed precisely 8 degrees west of north. Centered on this axis, with every structure in flawless alignment, were several smaller pyramids and plazas, platforms and mounds, covering a total area of more than 3 square miles. There was something detached and odd about La Venta, a sense that its original function had not been properly understood. Archaeologists referred to it as a ceremonial center, and very probably that is what it was. If one were honest, however, one would have to admit that it could also have been several other things. The truth is that nothing is known about the social organization, ceremonies, and belief systems of the Olmecs. We do not know what language they spoke, or what traditions they passed to their children. We don't even know what ethnic group they belonged to. The exceptionally humid conditions of the Gulf of Mexico mean that not a single Olmec skeleton has survived. In reality, despite the names we have given them and the views we've formed about them, these people are completely obscure to us. It is even possible that the enigmatic sculptures they left behind, which we presume depicted them, were not their work at all, but the work of a far earlier and forgotten people. Not for the first time, I found myself wondering whether some of the great heads and other remarkable artifacts attributed to the Olmecs might not have been handed down like heirlooms, perhaps over many millennia, to the cultures which eventually began to build the mounds and pyramids at San Lorenzo and La Venta. If so, Then who are we speaking of when we use the label Olmec? The mound builders? Or the powerful and imposing men with negroid features who provided the models for the monolithic heads? Fortunately, some 50 pieces of Olmec monumental sculpture, including 3 of the giant heads, were rescued from La Venta by Carlos Pellicer Camara, a local poet and historian who intervened forcefully when he discovered that oil drilling by the Pemex company jeopardized the ruins. By determined lobbying of the politicians of Tabasco, within which La Venta lies, he arranged to have the significant finds moved to a park on the outskirts of the regional capital Villahermosa. Taken together, these finds constitute a precious and irreplaceable cultural record, or rather, a whole library of cultural records left behind by a vanished civilization. But nobody knows how to read the language of those records. Deus ex machina. Villahermosa, Tabasco Province. I was looking at an elaborate relief that had been dubbed Man in Serpent by the archaeologists who found it at La Venta. According to expert opinion, it showed an Olmec wearing a headdress and holding an incense bag enveloped by a feathered serpent. The relief was carved into a slab of solid granite, measuring about 4 feet wide by 5 feet high, and showed a man sitting with his legs stretched out in front of him as though he were reaching for pedals with his feet. He held a small, bucket-shaped object in his right hand. With his left, he appeared to be raising or lowering a lever. The headdress he wore was an odd and complicated garment. To my eye, it seemed more functional than ceremonial, although I could not imagine what its function might have been. On it, or perhaps on a console above it, were 2 X-shaped crosses. I turned my attention to the other principal element of the sculpture, the feathered serpent. On one level it did indeed depict exactly that, a plumed or feathered serpent, the age-old symbol of Quetzalcoatl, whom the Olmecs, therefore, must have worshipped or at the very least recognized. Scholars do not dispute this interpretation. It is generally accepted that Quetzalcoatl's cult was immensely ancient, originating in prehistoric times in Central America, and thereafter receiving the devotion of many cultures during the historic period. The feathered serpent in this particular sculpture, however, had certain characteristics that set it apart. It seemed to be more than just a religious symbol. Indeed, there was something rigid and structured about it that made it look almost like a piece of machinery. Whispers of Ancient Secrets. Later that day, I took shelter in the giant shadow cast by one of the Olmec heads Carlos Pellicer Camara had rescued from La Venta. It was the head of an old man, with a broad, flat nose and thick lips. The lips were slightly parted, exposing strong, square teeth. The expression of the face suggested an ancient, patient wisdom, and the eyes seemed to gaze unafraid into eternity, like those of the Great Sphinx at Giza in Lower Egypt. It would probably be impossible, I thought, for a sculptor to invent all the different combined characteristics of an authentic racial type. The portrayal of an authentic combination of racial characteristics therefore implied strongly that a human model had been used. I walked around the great head a couple of times. It was 22 feet in circumference, weighed 19.8 tons, stood almost 8 feet high, had been carved out of solid basalt, and displayed clearly an authentic combination of racial characteristics. Indeed, like the other pieces I had seen at Santiago Tuxtla and at Tres Zapotes, it unmistakably and unambiguously showed a Negro. My own view is that the Olmec heads present us with physiologically accurate images of real individuals of Negroid stock, charismatic and powerful African men whose presence in Central America 3,000 years ago has not yet been explained by scholars. Nor is there any certainty that the heads were actually carved in that epoch. Carbon dating of fragments of charcoal found in the same pits tells us only the age of the charcoal. Calculating the true antiquity of the heads themselves is a much more complex matter. It was with such thoughts that I continued my slow walk among the strange and wonderful monuments of La Venta. They whispered of ancient secrets. The secret of the man in the machine, The Secret of the Negro Heads, and last but not least, The Secret of a Legend Brought to Life. For it seemed that flesh might indeed have been put on the mythical bones of Quetzalcoatl, when I found that several of the La Venta sculptures contained realistic likenesses, not only of Negroes, but of tall, thin-featured, long-nosed, apparently Caucasian men with straight hair and full beards, wearing flowing robes.